The headlines: Iran says the removal of all sanctions, which is a prerequisite for the U.S. return to the JCPOA, needs to be verified by Tehran. At least two people are killed in Myanmar's second largest city after police fired to disperse anti-coup protesters. And whole neighborhoods in Indonesia's capital Jakarta and dozens of major roads are flooded after torrential rains pounded the city overnight. Hello and welcome from our headquarters in Tehran. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shahmadi and these are our top stories this hour. Iran's ambassador to the United Nations says Washington's return to the 2015 nuclear deal would be meaningful only if it removes all sanctions against Tehran. Majid Tahrir-Avanchi said Iran's acceptance of the restriction of some of its nuclear activities was in response to lifting sanctions by the UN Security Council, Europe, and the U.S. He added that the removal of those sanctions must be verified and a simple statement or signature would not be acceptable to Tehran. The Iranian envoy stressed that once his country finds the process of sanctions removal properly executed, it would fulfill its obligations under the deal. Tahrir-Avanchi also referred to the necessity of compensating Iran for its financial losses, adding that the issue is, however, not a prerequisite for the U.S. return to the JCPOA. U.S. President Joe Biden has taken new steps on Iran and the nuclear deal. Speaking at the Munich Security Conference, Biden signaled that the U.S. is willing to talk with Iran about the nuclear deal to be brokered by the EU. Iran does not find that enough. Tehran regards the steps the U.S. has taken as a non-starter.
U.S. President Joe Biden's administration has announced three symbolic gestures toward Iran in an apparent break with former President Donald Trump's so-called maximum pressure campaign against Tehran. Ned Price, a spokesman for the State Department, said Thursday the Biden administration was willing to meet with Iranian officials and other world powers involved in negotiating the nuclear deal. Price said Washington would accept an invitation from the European Union's top diplomat to attend a meeting aimed to discuss a diplomatic way forward on Iran's nuclear program.
Well, the U.S. is trying to play a little game here by saying, I'm going to go to Europe and I'm going to meet Iranians and I want to talk about the JCPOA and maybe the U.S. will lift some sanctions. Just the message the U.S. is just not getting it right. The U.S. needs to understand when Iran stopped giving false hope that there is no return to the JCPOA unless the Americans lift all sanctions, apply the lifting of the sanctions, allow Iran to sell its oil and to make deal with other companies as stated in JCPOA, and then Iran will stop withdrawing from the nuclear deal.
Washington says it has lifted travel restrictions on Iranian diplomats accredited to the United Nations, headquartered in New York, limitations that were imposed by Trump in 2019. Also, in a letter to the UN Security Council on behalf of Biden, acting U.S. Ambassador Richard Mills said the United States has withdrawn three letters from the Trump administration that claimed the U.S. had reimposed UN sanctions on the Islamic Republic. Mills said that sanctions measures terminated in Resolution 2231 endorsing the nuclear deal, known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, with six world powers, remain terminated. This is while the overwhelming majority of the members in the 15-nation council had described Trump's bid to restore UN embargoes on Iran as illegal, arguing the U.S. was no longer a member of the JCPOA.
The U.S. has offered a couple of steps that it would take at this point to show what it considers as steps to bring Iran back to the negotiating table. It has eased strict travel restrictions on Iran's U.N. diplomats imposed by Mr. Trump. It has also reversed Trump's efforts to restore all U.N. sanctions on Iran. Iran's response? Well, Iran's leader has stated that the U.S. must lift all sanctions first. Then these U.S. moves fall short of Iran's request. This means that Tehran considers Washington's moves to be a non-starter. Meanwhile, the clock is ticking on the IAEA inspections. Iran has said that it would limit snap inspections of its nuclear sites by February 21st.
In a tweet, Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif responded to the U.S. acknowledgement that the snapback mechanism of the JCPOA has not been triggered. He reiterated Iran's position that Washington must lift all sanctions imposed, reimposed, or relabeled under the Trump administration before Tehran reverses its scaleback of the commitments under the nuclear accord. Zarif had earlier urged France, Britain, and Germany, three European signatories to the nuclear agreement, to abandon their calls on Iran to act first to salvage the JCPOA and instead demand an end to the U.S. quote, economic terrorism on Tehran. In a reaction to the U.S. announcement that it would accept the EU's invitation to a meeting of Iran and the P5+1, Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Said Khatibzadeh said P5+1 no longer exists due to Washington's withdrawal from the deal. He repeated Iranian officials' stance that the U.S. must first put its words into action before Tehran follows suit. Even after the U.S. exit from the JCPOA and the reimposition of sanctions, Iran remained fully committed to the accord for a year before gradually reducing its commitments in five steps, citing the failure of the European signatories to the deal to keep their end of the bargain.
Iran made it very clear the government is forced to abide by the decision of the parliament, and the parliament decided to implement several steps, one after the other. The first one is the 21st of February, and on the 21st of February, Iran will withdraw from the voluntary protocol and will reduce the sudden inspection of the atomic energy inspector. Therefore, the Americans need to understand that there are other steps that will follow if the sanctions are not lifted.
The country has times and again noted that all the retaliatory steps are reversible once all signatories honor their obligations.
Moving on, anti-coup demonstrations in Myanmar turn deadly as people continue to demand a return to civilian government. A volunteer emergency service says two people were shot dead in Mandalay as police used live ammunition to disperse the protesters. About 30 demonstrators were also injured. The rallies came after the Friday killing of a young woman shot in the head by security forces. Hundreds of people have been arrested during more than 2 weeks of demonstrations. There has also been a growing civil disobedience campaign as people demand the release of civilian leaders, including Aung San Suu Kyi. The unrest started when the military seized power in a coup at the start of February, claiming the November elections were rigged. Now, Rohingya refugees living in camps across India have been terrified amid renewed fears that government may arrest them for illegally entering the country. Scores of them have been arrested since last month. Munawar Zaman reports.
In this Rohingya refugee camp in the outskirts of New Delhi, there is an utter panic and the residents are fearful, even going out to buy the essentials. They say many are chased, intimidated, and usually police and other agencies visit their camps to monitor their movements. Ali Johar, a young Rohingya refugee, says several have been arrested in the recent months and put into jails for illegally entering India, saying the whole community is in utter despair.
Around 60 people have been arrested in the different parts of India, including West Bengal, Manipur, Assam, Haryana, and Delhi. In Delhi, around 8 people were detained. In Haryana, several families were harassed to leave out from Haryana.
Fearful of possible arrest and expulsion, Scores of refugees have gone into hiding across the Indian subcontinent, while others have entered Bangladesh amid a mounting hate campaign against the community in India. The destitute community, who has escaped what the United Nations described genocide, is struggling for existence amid international silence about their plight. An estimated 40,000 are living in India. The community has faced a brutal crackdown by the army in their country, such as rape, murder, child killings, arbitrary arrests, forced disappearances, as well as destruction of the entire Rohingya villages. Now many fear that the military coup might make the situation even worse. Some reports suggest hundreds of Rohingya are being held in Indian jails on charges of illegal entry and have no proper judicial support. Their men are unable to find work due to lack of identity cards and threats of intimidation by law enforcement agencies forcing men to stay at their camps.
We have been living here peacefully since 2012. We came to save our lives, but the police and other agencies are usually coming to our camps for questioning, asking our IDs, and this has become a routine. We are terrified and we can't even sleep, thinking what would happen to us.
Anti-Rohingya sentiments have risen since the emergence of Hindu nationalist government of BJP in 2014. Since then, many anti-Rohingya campaigns and Hindu groups have been demanding their expulsion, while the government describes them a security threat. Observers say the Rohingya refugees in particular have in the past and present been used largely for political reasons in this part of the world. Munawar Zaman, New Delhi.
Hundreds of people have been evacuated after torrential rains pounded Indonesia's capital, Jakarta, flooding many areas. The rescue operations are underway, with crew on rafts extracting people from submerged houses. Some 1,300 people were forced to evacuate their homes. Water levels rose to nearly 3 meters in some neighborhoods of the capital. Southern and eastern areas of Jakarta were the hardest hit, with submerged homes, cars, and waterlogged streets. Officials say that the floods were caused by extreme downpours during this monsoon season. Early last year, the city saw one of its deadliest floods, which also triggered a devastating landslide that killed dozens of people. A protest has been held outside Thailand's parliament, where the prime minister survived a no-confidence vote. Over 1,000 demonstrators rallied outside the National Assembly gates in the capital, Bangkok. The protesters said they were disappointed with the vote result, even though they expected it. Organizers pledged that the protests would remain peaceful, and there is no reason for the police to break up the demonstrations. The police said that some 4,000 officers were on standby to maintain order. It said that the rallies were in violation of an emergency decree to control the coronavirus outbreak. Lawmakers voted in favor of Prime Minister Pariyut after a 4-day debate.
The number of those who don't agree to vote for no confidence is 272. 3 abstained from voting. In conclusion, the tally of those who don't agree is more than the required number of the total MPs. Therefore, the vote shows that there is confidence in Pariyut.
9 other ministers also survived no-confidence votes. The rejection of the no-confidence was widely anticipated due to the majority of the premier's coalition government in the lower house. The opposition had criticized the government for its handling of the coronavirus outbreak, the economy, and alleged corruption. Since last year, a student-led protest movement has called for Pariyut and his government to step down. They are calling for an amendment of the constitution to make it more democratic and for a reformation of the monarchy to make it more accountable. U.S. President Joe Biden has approved a major disaster declaration for Texas. The state has been suffering widespread power outages and water shortages during a deep freeze. Authorities say the action makes federal funding available to individuals across the state, including assistance for temporary housing and home repairs, as well as low-cost loans. Biden is also weighing a trip to Texas to survey the federal response to the crisis there. Millions of Texans have been dealing with power outages and disrupted water services. An unprecedented winter storm wreaked havoc across much of the country's southern and central parts this week. The storm and a frigid snap have left nearly 24 people dead. Argentina's health minister has resigned over claims of improper COVID-19 vaccine allocation. Inés González García stepped down after it emerged that some of his friends sidestepped proper procedure for vaccinations. The resignation was tendered on the request of President Alberto Fernández on Friday. González García, a 75-year-old doctor, will be replaced by one of his deputy ministers, Carla Bisotti. Local media have reported that other people close to the government were also vaccinated at the health ministry without following the procedure. This is while Argentina just started vaccinating the elderly on Wednesday after giving the jabs to healthcare workers. Argentina has recorded some 2 million COVID cases and more than 50,000 deaths. Barcelona Public Prosecutor's Office has opened an investigation into a potential hate speech campaign against Muslims in Catalonia led by Spain's far-right party, Vox. The investigation follows a denunciation by leaders for the Muslim community in the Spanish northeastern region. Kusai Kedri reports.
The prosecutor's office against hate crimes in Barcelona says it sees sufficient evidence to investigate Spain's far right for allegedly inciting hatred against Muslims following a complaint by several Muslim communities in Catalonia. At the core of the controversy is a video published online by the nativist ultra-nationalist party Vox during the recent election campaign in Catalonia.
The video falsely claims the entire Muslim community in Catalonia is responsible for the 2017 terrorist attacks in Barcelona. It purportedly shows footage of women in burqas in mosques that was actually shot in Afghanistan and other countries.
Vox's Twitter account was temporarily suspended at the end of January for breaching the company's hate speech regulations with false accusations and unfounded claims against Muslims in Catalonia.
Their strategy is to polarize society, to create fear and manipulate that fear in order to antagonize communities. This is an old mechanism that underlies all forms of racism. It alienates others by labeling them as foreigners. It goes back centuries in the Iberian Peninsula, and that is where you need to start in order to understand the rise of Islamophobia in Spain.
Vox won 11 seats in Catalonia's regional parliament. Their aggressive campaign against Muslims has raised awareness among community leaders to re-examine their alliances. Although Catalonia is home to nearly 500,000 Muslims and has elected its first Muslim female member of parliament in 2017, it does not have a central cultural center or great mosque to this day.
Unlike in previous suits against the far right, representatives of the Muslim community in Catalonia say they believe they have a solid case against Vox. They trust the courts will do them justice this time around. Kusai Kedri, Barcelona.
And with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Leadership from the perspective of Imam Khomeini. If the leader is not acquainted with law, he will not be competent to govern people, because if he follows another person in taqlid, that will weaken his power, and if he does not, he cannot put Islamic law into effect. The tradition that the Islamic jurists rule over the kings is undisputed. If kings really follow Islam, they should follow the Islamic jurists and ask their opinion. And this way, the jurists themselves will be the real ruler, and therefore the power should officially be given to them. A leader should be perfect in religious beliefs and morals, just and spiritually not polluted with sins. The individual who wants to take the responsibility for applying the Islamic penal code properly, to control the Muslims' assets and country's expenditure, and wants Allah the Exalted to delegate him the administration of his servants' affairs, should not be a sinner, because Allah the Almighty does not allow a tyrant to have such a power.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We're going to talk about the viewpoint of Imam Khomeini in regards to the independence. And we mentioned about the independence in the previous episode. Now, today I have another saying of Imam Khomeini in this regard. And Imam Khomeini is talking to the nation and the people in the government and everyone. And he says that, O nation, wake up. O government, wake up. Everybody, wake up. You are all in the presence of God. Tomorrow in the next world, you will be called to account. Do not ignore the blood of our martyrs and do not quarrel over positions or status. Basically, when you're affiliated with someone, then this takes your independence. If you want to be independent as a government, as a person, as a nation, you must rely on one, and that is God. And if you work for God, that's when you are really independent, because you just rely on God. You have fear of none but God. Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum, Ya Hayyu Ya Qayyum.
You just rely on God. Why? Because the universe is God's presence. And that's why when Imam Khomeini is referring to the government, he's talking to the people, that's what he's saying, that remember that tomorrow we all are accountable. If we have affiliation with different places, if we are relying on different countries, on different people, on the power of different people, then obviously you cannot become independent. If you fear others, then you cannot become independent. In order to become independent, in order to become powerful, you must rely on Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. Africa Today.
Following the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, Iran extended full support to African liberation movements. Nelson Mandela, the late South African anti-apartheid revolutionary leader, visited Iran in 1992 to express his appreciation to the Islamic Republic for its support. Mandela was clearly pleased to meet the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution. Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a warm welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today, which is focusing on how the Islamic Revolution in Iran inspired liberation movements in Africa. and how African people continue to get inspired by Iran's resistance to Western imperialist countries. Stay with us till the end of our show as our analysts discuss this subject. And don't forget to send us your views as you watch our show today.
Islamic Revolution Inspiring Africa. Most countries in Africa, just like Iran, have experienced exploitation of their resources by European and American colonialists. After the victory of Iran's Islamic Revolution in 1979, liberations movements in South Africa and Namibia looked towards Iran for inspiration in their struggle for independence. The victory of the Islamic Revolution coincided with an era in which apartheid was at its height in South Africa and the masses were resisting the racist regime. Oliver Tambo, the former president of the ANC in exile, was among the first to send words of congratulations to Imam Khomeini after the victory of the revolution. Part of the message stated that the ANC joins all progressive humanity in the celebration of your achievement and welcomes the new Iran into the ranks of the anti-imperialist and anti-racist community of nations. We salute the heroic Iranian people. During his visit to Iran, April 2016, the then South African president, Jacob Zuma, stated that Iran occupies a special place in his country's struggle against apartheid.
Iran occupies a special place in our history of struggle in South Africa. Iran was at the forefront of the fight against apartheid, pledging solidarity with the South African people and cutting ties with the apartheid regime.
The Islamic Revolution in Iran also inspired Islamic and even non-Islamic movements in Africa. Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, the incarcerated leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, explains here on the impact of Imam Khomeini's thoughts on other movements.
Also, the revolution has taught us about the power of people. It has impacts elsewhere outside Iran.
Now, for more analysis on the impact of Iran's Islamic revolution on the liberation movements in Africa, we have contacted Said Abdullah Husseini, the director of the Islamic Center for Africa in Johannesburg, and Bukangesa, an activist and commentator based in Nairobi. We shall also be joined later by Suhaila Zakzaki, the daughter of the leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki. Now, thank you all for joining us. We're going to start off with Said Abdullah Husseini in Johannesburg. Our first question to you now, can you briefly tell us how the Islamic revolution inspired the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa?
The Shah regime had a very close ties with the South African regime and supporting, and they had also oil business, and the Sasol in South Africa was owned by Shah, but some portion of that was owned by Shah, and a lot of other things to that extent, that even the father of the Shah died here in South Africa and he had a palace here. Well, all of these has made the people in South Africa to hate the Shah regime the same way that they hate the regime of apartheid. So when the Islamic revolution in Iran started, they have realized that they are they have got a support. And when the Islamic revolution in Iran was victorious, they have come to conclusion that if Iranian managed to get rid of Shah, definitely they also can get rid of the apartheid regime.
Thanks for that, Mr. Husseini, and stay tuned for more.
The Islamic revolution greatly contributed to the eventual victory of the anti-apartheid movement in South Africa. To practically show how he valued Iran's contribution to his country's liberation, South African anti-apartheid leader Nelson Mandela visited Iran after his freedom, even before becoming president. When he met the leader of Iran's revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, he addressed him as my leader.
During his time as the president of South Africa, Nelson Mandela reiterated his country's diplomatic independence as he welcomed the then Iranian president Ali Akbar Hashimi Rafsanjani. During the state visit in 1996, Mandela categorically stated that no country can choose friends for South Africa.
We form our friendships on the basis of principle, and those who are with us when we're all alone will continue to be our friend. And the fact that any particular country may be their enemies does not influence our attitude.
Now, Mr. Husseini, South Africa has continued to enjoy close ties with Iran after the fall of the apartheid regime. Now, how did Iran's support for the anti-apartheid liberation movement impact on the present ties between the two countries?
Well, from before the time of their victory in 1994, Iran was one of the Islamic Revolution was one of the countries which they were supporting unconditional the struggle in South Africa. In the they were supporting PAC, they were supporting ANC. There was close ties between the Islamic Revolution and the people who were in South Africa doing struggle. And even Nelson Mandela, before victory, after he was released from jail, he had a travel to Iran, and also some substantial aid also has been received by the by ANC. And after 1994, then they officially opened their embassy, which was an intersection before, and from that time they are enjoying a good relationship together.
Now, speaking when he hosted President Zuma, Iranian President Hassan Rouhani referred to Iran's assistance to the South African Liberation Movement after the 1979 Islamic Revolution. Now, Mr. Husseini, can you elaborate on why the liberation movements in South Africa and Namibia found the Islamic Revolution inspirational?
In spite of the international sanctions, Iran was continuing to have a close ties with South African regime, and they had relationship. This was something which the people in South Africa didn't like from the Shah regime. So when Iranian wake up and started their revolution against Shah, this was an inspiration to the people of South Africa in the South African region, in the Southern African region, actually Namibia and Zimbabwe, other places. All of them, they have been inspired by the Islamic Revolution, because they were saying, if Iranian managed to get rid of Shah, we are also able to get rid of the apartheid regime in South Africa.
Thanks for that insight, Mr. Husseini. Now, don't go away. We shall be right back to talk more about how Iran's Islamic Revolution inspired various freedom movements in Africa.
Islamic Revolution Inspiring Africa.
We are back again as we analyze how the Islamic Revolution in Iran inspired and continues to inspire freedom movements across Africa. Now, a popular Islamic awakening movement, also known as the Arab Spring, swept across the Arab world from early 2011. Tunisia in North Africa was the cradle of this movement that touched off a chain of uprisings across many Arab nations. Well, there is no doubt that this popular awakening drew inspiration from Iran's Islamic Revolution. Mr. Husseini, in your opinion, how did Iran's Islamic Revolution inspire the Islamic awakening of the Arab Spring, which started off in Tunisia?
From that time, the Arab world realized that we cannot trust our leaders. And they were waiting for a spark. And that spark started from Tunisia and then went to Egypt and went to other countries. And all of these were under the effect of Islamic Revolution, who was calling for the decline of Israel and the demolition of Islam, the apartheid regime in Israel. So in this way, they have been in the same way that the Hamas was inspired by the Islamic Revolution, the same way that Hezbollah in Lebanon has been inspired by the Iranian Revolution. They did manage to get rid of the Israelis from Lebanon. The people of region also, they have realized that they have power and they are able to deal with their regimes.
Thanks for that, Mr. Husseini. Indeed, power is in the hands of the people. Now, in your opinion, what are some of the weaknesses that made the Islamic Awakening movement in North Africa fail to fully replicate the success of Iran's Islamic Revolution?
Well, that is also something to be discussed because, in fact, the Arab Spring didn't start from Tunisia. The Arab Spring was highlighted there, but the Arab Spring actually started when Mohamed Morsi of Egypt, after him becoming victorious in an election in Egypt, he didn't close his relationship with the Israelis, and they wrote a letter to the president of Israel asking him, calling him my esteemed friend, and assure him of continuation of relationship between Egypt and Israel. From that time, the Arab world realized that we cannot trust our leaders. And they were waiting for a spark, and that spark started from Tunisia and then went to Egypt and went to other countries.
Let's move on to West Africa, where Iran's Islamic Revolution has inspired millions of people in this region, which has a rich and ancient Islamic civilization. The Islamic Movement of Nigeria is a popular organization led by Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki, currently being detained by authorities since 2015. In late 2015, Nigerian forces brutally attacked Zakzaki's residence in the city of Zaria in Kaduna State and the followers of the peaceful Muslim movement that he leads. In one of his speeches, Sheikh Zakzaki expounded on some of the reasons that led to the success of Imam Khomeini's movement.
Soviet Union collapsed because of a test which was based on false narration. What do you think of what you may call Western ideology, capitalism? Will it survive? Is it based on true narration? Narration of the reality of things. The reason why Imam succeeded is he has based his teachings on true narration of what is truth. True teach is message of Almighty Allah to entire mankind through his messenger.
Now we are joined by Suhaila Zakzaki, the daughter of the leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria, Sheikh Ibrahim Zakzaki. Thanks a lot for your time. Now, the leader of the Islamic movement, Sheikh Zakzaki, has also been called Africa's Imam Khomeini. Can you tell us how Iran's Islamic Revolution and its leader, Imam Khomeini, inspired Sheikh Zakzaki?
First of all, I believe that, you know, the Islamic Revolution of Iran has inspired my father greatly in so many ways. I recall him telling a story of how his first introduction to who Imam Khomeini was, which he told me was at a class It was during a class when he was in university, and someone was trying, one of their teachers was discussing the subject of influence versus power. And they were trying to explain how certain people might not hold power and have a lot of influence. And that particular teacher cited Imam Khomeini as an example. And he said that Imam Khomeini was like such, the story of Imam Khomeini, just as brief as it was in the class, was quite memorable. And so that was his first introduction to Imam Khomeini, when the discussion of his influence in Iran, well, around the time when, you know, he was being cracked down on by the previous Iranian government.
That's quite an interesting insight on how Imam Khomeini influenced Sheikh Zakzaki, who went on to form the Islamic movement in Nigeria. Thanks for that, Ms. Suhaila.
The victory of the Islamic Revolution gave impetus to the nascent Palestinian Liberation Movement. Palestinians have been struggling for decades to free their land from Israeli occupation, and African governments have been at the forefront of supporting Palestinian liberation. However, before 1979, the masses in Africa rarely participated in rallies to express their support for Palestine. Now, every year across Africa, masses come out massively to express solidarity with Palestinians during the International Quds Day. This day is a legacy of the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, who designated the day in solidarity with Palestinians.
Because of we coming from an apartheid situation, the world also did steps like this in support of us. And because of so many marches and BDS movements worldwide, we fought and we broke apartheid. It's important for us to show solidarity with Palestine, because an injustice to one person is injustice to everyone worldwide, and we cannot separate ourselves. We do not live isolated in a world. We cannot keep quiet in the face of injustice. So it's important for us to highlight this, to educate people and to expose what is happening.
Let's now move over to Bukangesa, a pro-Palestinian activist and political commentator based in Nairobi, Kenya. Thanks, sir, for your time. Now, African civil society groups have been organizing the masses to mark the annual International Quds Day in solidarity with Palestine. How did the Islamic Revolution inspire African masses to come out and publicly express support for Palestine?
African people have been, you know, historically been brutalized by colonial and now neo-colonial forces. They draw a lot of inspiration from the consistency in the foreign policy of Iranian people that has been pro-people. For example, we have seen the Iranian people showing their solidarity, the Iranian government showing their solidarity with the oppressed masses in Africa, particularly during the apartheid regime in South Africa. So it's indeed that we also see that the Iranian people have a clear and consistent and even independent policy that is pro-people, and that to us we see it as a big win for all the anti-imperialist and of course anti-Zionist forces that reside here in the global south and elsewhere in the world.
Very well put there by Bukangesa. Resisting Western imperialism is the only way for Africa to attain real independence. Now, as an African inspired by Iran's Islamic Revolution, what message do you have for the Iranian people?
You know, the Persian history that is anchored on the spirit of resistance that is continuing to inspire the Iranian people and to continue to refuse, you know, the policy of the thugs in Washington. So African people know this, and they know that to defeat the colonial forces, then it meant a protracted warfare. It was not, you know, a policy of surrender. So we want to pass revolutionary greetings to our Iranian brothers and sisters and tell them that they have the revolutionary credentials, they have anti-imperialism credentials, and even standing tall against the arrogance of the United States of America. And particularly, we are very proud of the Iranian people winning trust across the board.
And just to add to what Mr. Angesa has said there, Iranians have had long and historical ties with the people of Africa for centuries, even before Western colonialists arrived in the continent. Back to you, Ms. Suhaila Zakzaki. Now tell us, what lessons do you think can be learned from Iran's Islamic Revolution?
people looked at religion for the most part as something that was backward, as something that was potentially limiting people who adhered to it. And at the very least, even if it didn't limit people, it was only seen as more of a private thing between people and God, and that was it, and nothing more. So the Islamic Revolution of Iran did come and shatter those perceptions, and definitely showed that Islam can be something beyond that, and is something beyond that, in all its complexities. The fact that it managed to achieve an Islamic government, an Islamic Republic of Iran.
Thanks for that, Ms. Suhaila Zakzaki. Now, Mr. Husseini, you have the last word in our show today. As we know, Iran inspired the liberation movements in South Africa and Namibia. Now, 42 years after the Islamic Revolution, Iran is now a powerful country and has attained self-sufficiency in many sectors despite crippling sanctions. What lessons can African countries learn from Iran in terms of relying on their own resources to attain desired development goals?
The African Union, the African countries must wake up. How long they allow the European and the Western countries to come and take their sources and don't share any of the wealth to the African people.
Well, you have it there. African people must rise and aspire to attain true economic independence for this great continent to prosper. Iran has and will always stand by the people of Africa in their quest for progress and true independence. With that, we come to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. On behalf of my colleagues, it's goodbye for now and take care.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.